Ruth spends that night with at Boaz's feet. And she gets up before dark, before the light comes up, so she can slip back into Bethlehem. She can get back to Naomi's house. And look what happens, verse 15. And again, he said to Ruth, she's not left yet. That's where she's headed, to Bethlehem. Give me your cloak that is on you and hold it. And she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. He had to help her put it on her shoulders so she could carry it. Let me explain what this means. See, y'all would just read past that. That's what I'm here for. You pay me for this. A dry measure of anything in the Bible is 2.175 bushels. He put 6 times 2.175 bushels of barley in her cloak, tied it up, and helped her get it up to where she could haul it into town. That's almost 13 bushels of grain. That he let. That's the reason why he said he had to lay it on her. She didn't carry it in her hands. She had to put it on her back. Boaz does not want her to go into town empty-handed. There's been a request. Look on, verse 16. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, that's the mother-in-law said, Naomi says, "How did it go, my daughter?" You would have said the exact same thing. You have been waiting and waiting to see how things turned out last night. And in Ruth slips in, "My daughter, how did it go?" And she told her all that the man had done. And Ruth said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Do you catch what he has done and what he is saying? He is saying, "I will redeem you if I can. I promise that. And this is a gift to prove to you that I will do what is important for me to do to take care of you." Verse 18. And then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter." Ruth, wait. "Until you know how the matter turns out. For the man will not rest until he has settled it tomorrow, next day. No, today. He is going to the gate, to the court today to settle the problem, to make the transaction, to do the redemption. He's going to settle it today." Folks, I want you to understand, there are some times in this life when the Redeemer is doing His work, the only thing you can do is wait. When your spouse is in the hospital and all things have been done, all you can do is wait on the Redeemer. When you don't know how things are going to turn out in the next few days because of circumstances that have happened that have seemed to cause your life to crater, it is time for you to turn to the Redeemer and wait. Notice what I said here. Read with me. Wait, ... until you know how the matter turns out. Sometimes there is nothing else that can be done except to wait for the Redeemer. He will not tarry. He is working all for our good. He is jumping the legal hurdles. There's a D there. It's supposed to be hurdles with an R, okay? He is maneuvering all the cast of characters into just the right place for His plan to work. The maids cannot help, and neither can the servants. Those being redeemed can do nothing to speed along the process. Only the Redeemer can handle the matter. Ruth and Naomi must wait to hear if Boaz or the other closer relative will be their Redeemer. All we can do is wait. Wait. Now, most of y'all have known me for a long time. Almost all of you have. There's a character, I don't know if it's a character flaw or just an incredible characteristic that I have. The characteristic is this, and I like the way it was said to me this week. I just plod along doing the work. Just plod. Job gets done. I'm not going to do it too fast. I'm not going to do it too slow. I'm just going to plod along to get the work done. And you let a hiccup come at me or somebody throw a curveball. Do you know what I do in those processes? I just stop. I just stop to wait to see what the Lord, the Redeemer, is doing. I don't press on and say, we got to get it done anyway. No, I don't do that. Those of y'all who worked out at Danbury, we do the same thing. Yep. We'd do it two times or three times and it still wouldn't work out. And so we'd go to a different project for a while. And we'd wait. Because in our ignorance, we weren't doing something right. And lo and behold, it would not be very long before another volunteer would show up, and that was his forte. He knew exactly what to do. And instead of us rushing in where fools rush in, we would wait on the Redeemer. I had a bad advice from a man when I was younger. His motto was, I may not always make the right decision, but it doesn't take me long to make a decision. And so I made that my motto for early on. You know what? It didn't work out very well for me. It really didn't. Because I thought I had to make a decision whether it was right or wrong. Now through the Scripture I know that we don't have to make a decision whether it's right or wrong. We have to wait on the Redeemer to reveal to us what the true decision should be. And so my motto now is, if you don't know, don't. And it'll sure save you a whole lot of money. And it'll sure keep you out of a pack of trouble. Well, all they can do is wait. Now about Boaz, chapter 4, verse 1. If you don't notice, we just changed the chapter. Please don't use chapter breaks here. Don't use chapter breaks anywhere in the Old Testament. When you're studying the Bible study 101, forget the chapter breaks and the verses. Only use them as references. Because in most cases, they stop the story where the story should not be stopped. When we get into our next passage, our next lesson we're going to start next week, I wish we could do it all in one sitting because it really is one message. It's going to take us 4 weeks. But it really is one message that we need to hear the entire message. But we can't do it that way. We can't do this one. I wish this was all been one message. Don't stop at the chapter breaks when you're studying. Keep reading on. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, turn aside, friend, and sit down here. And he turned and sat down. You see, all the business was not handled in a courtroom. It was handled at the gate. That's where everything happened in every city in the Promised Land. And in comes the closer relative. He knows him. You know how he knows? Because he's a relative of the relative. He's Boaz's relative too. He's Naomi's relative. He's Boaz's relative. Because they're all from the same line of the tribe of tribes. They're all related. They all come from the descendant of one man who formed with his family this town that we know as Bethlehem. So he's turned aside. And then look, he says, and he took 10 men of the elders. 10 of the elders, because this is what these elders did. They came to the city gates, and they sat at the city gates, and they waited to be a witness of transactions. And he said to them, sit down here. So they sat down also. It's what they did. It's how everything was done, was at the city gates. Then he said to the close relative, here's the deal. This is where we know that Ruth had a request from Naomi when she uncovered his feet. We've got to catch it. It's not told to us, but we catch it when we know the traditions and the customs. Naomi has come back from the land of Moab. She has to sell the piece of land which belongs to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here, meaning the elders. Do it as a legal transaction, and before the elders of my people. And if you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you. And he said, I will redeem it. Close relative, here's the land. There's the land to be sold. Naomi has it. You're the first one in line. Redeem it if you want to, but let me know if you don't, because if you won't, I will. And the man says, I will redeem it. Now, if you were Boaz, I wonder what your heart just did. Did your stomach just turn upside down? Did your heart just drop? I'm not sure it did, because Boaz is a wise and wealthy man, and he has a plan. So then Boaz said, all right, close relative, I wish we knew his name, but we don't. On the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance. Oh, this close relative knows exactly what that means. She's a Moabitess, and he has to take her too. Now listen, he's going to redeem the land. That means he's got to take Naomi also. That's a mouth to feed. Now he's got to take a Moabitess. That's not only a mouth to feed, but the law said a Moabitess cannot even be within the assembly of the people. He says, I can't. He must have a child and raise that child on that land in the name of the father, on his inheritance, and when the son becomes of age, he must give that land back to that son to be his. And the close relative says, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I jeopardize my own inheritance. I can't. I'm sure that close relative must have been younger than Boaz, and probably his father was still alive. And there are prejudices that go down through every single generation to generation. And I'm sure that young close relative was thinking about, if I take this Moabite woman into my family and have a child with it, my father that's still alive will disinherit me and I will not get all that's mine. It's all about money, isn't it? It's all about money. With Boaz, it's not about money, folks. That has nothing to do about money. Boaz is already wealthy. He wants to do it out of kindness, not because of money. Redeem it for yourself, he tells Boaz. You may have the right of my redemption, for I cannot redeem it. Well, I bet that just made Boaz happy, and it did. Now, this was the custom in the former times in Israel concerning the redemption and the exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, and he removed his sandal. Took off his sandal and gave it to Boaz. Now actually there's more to this process. Had Naomi been there, instead of being back at the house waiting to hear how everything turned out, Naomi would have been responsible to do something else. Rather disgusting in today's life. But some of y'all, you women, would have loved to have the opportunity to do this. Deuteronomy says, let's pick up this Deuteronomy 23. Here's the law, right out of Deuteronomy 23:3. When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of the dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out from Israel. But if the man does not desire to take his wife's brother, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel. He is not willing to perform the duties of a husband's brother to me. Then the elders of the city shall summon him and speak to him. And if he persists and says, I do not desire to take her, then his brother's wife shall come to him in the sight of the elders and pull his sandal off his foot and spit in his face, and she shall declare, thus it is done to the man who does not build up his brother's house. Had Naomi been there, she could have come up, grabbed his sandal, and spit in his face. Do you know why probably Naomi was not there that day? Because she wanted Ruth with Boaz, not the nearest relative. Now that's just speculation, but I bet when you all get to heaven, what a day, glorious day that will be, when we all finally get there, lo and behold, we'll all find out that I was right. Ask that question. Put that on your heaven bucket list of questions that you have to ask. But I think Ruth is very pleased with what has happened. Then Boaz said to the elders of all the city, you are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belongs to Elimelech and all that belongs to Chilion and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon. There we go. We finally know. Last week we didn't know in the opening which one was her husband. Now we know as Mahlon was Ruth's husband. I have taken the widow of Mahlon to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased may not be cut off from his brother or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. The legal transaction is done. I wish we could do things that easy around here. Of course, then you don't see it here, but Boaz then had to pay the elders to take care and be witnesses of the legal transaction. And you say, how in the world did they know whose sandal was whose? I mean, didn't they all look the same? No, they didn't all look the same. They were all handmade. They all looked a little different. And everyone knew that they put a mark on that shoe, that sandal, and it was given to Boaz. Those elders basically signed the shoe and gave it to Boaz, and that was the legal abstract that said, Boaz has been the redeemer. And all the people who were in the court and the elders said something. All the people, they said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. Rachel and Leah, two of the wives, two of the four wives of Jacob. They had handmaids. Rachel and Leah both had handmaids. And those handmaids gave Jacob sons, and so did Rachel and Leah. Rachel only gave Jacob Joseph and Benjamin before she died. Leah gave him four sons. And then there were the others came from the two handmaids of these two that their father had given to them as they left the house. When Jacob left the house, I want to understand this, Jacob did not have a son until he was 77 years old. His first son was born when Jacob was 77 years old. His last son, Benjamin, was born whenever Jacob was 92 years old, and Joseph was born when he was 91 years old. Jacob was an old man when he had children, as old men go, as we've already covered that. In the span of life of normally having children, have I just offended just all of y'all today? I guess I have. You know what I mean. Well, they ask the blessing here. Moreover, they go on to say, may your house be like the house of Perez, who Tamar bore to Judah. Jacob's son Judah had three sons. Actually had four. Son dies, and the oldest son is supposed to do his duty in this Deuteronomy thing, and his name is Onan, and he decides not to do it correctly, and she does not bear a son, and Onan dies. And then the next son comes along to perform the duty, and he is wicked, and the Lord kills him. And then finally there's one very young son. And when I mean young, I mean under 10 years of age. And Jacob says, he is too young to give to you, to be a husband to you. So wait until he grows up and I will give him to you. And so Tamar waits and waits and waits and waits, and the son grows. And Judah does not give that young son to Tamar. So Tamar gets upset, and she devises a plan. And when Jacob comes into the city one day or out to the area, Tamar dresses up like she is a rather loose lady of the evening. And Judah decides to have a relationship with her that night. And for payment, he does not bring anything to pay, so she takes his belt and his stick as a earnest money that he will send her the payment of the little kid whenever he returns back to the flock, the kid not being a child, but being an animal, a lamb. Months go by, 3 months go by, and he has not paid his bill because he cannot find her because she has disappeared. And lo and behold, the word comes out that his daughter-in-law, Tamar, is pregnant. And Judah wants to kill that woman, Tamar. So Tamar is brought to him, and when she comes, she shows him the sash, and she shows him the cane, and they're all handmade. You didn't go buy these in duplicates, folks. And Judah knew that they were his. And Perez is the one who is in the line. He's in this whole generation of line. And after that, after all that happens, about 10 years after that happens, Jacob finally moves all the family to Egypt. So now you know in the timeline where this happens. It happens before they go to Egypt, and now we're way on down after that. We're 400 years after that, in fact. after coming out of Egypt 400 years before. There's 967 years of time being told within this story here. But they want to be blessed because Perez gives a blessing to Jacob and to Judah. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son there in Bethlehem. Look on. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today." When the boy is born, they go to Naomi and say, "Naomi, you are so blessed. Not only have you been redeemed by your kinsman redeemer, but the Lord has blessed you with a child, and may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Those women go on to say something else. They say, then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap. Naomi takes the grandbaby, the boy, and puts it on his lap and becomes her nurse. It's going to take care of her. It's going to be the child's maid that's going to teach that child to read and to write and to do everything. And the neighbor women gave him a name. The neighbor women gave him a name saying, "A son has been born to Naomi," so they named him Obed. Who named him Obed? The women in Bethlehem, the neighbor women. His name was Obed, but his name was also Mahlon. Mahlon would be his legal name. Obed is the nickname. And it was very common for people to give people nicknames in those days, because the name Obed means serving. And it is the culmination. He is named as the culmination of what Ruth has done for Naomi. Throughout Ruth's life, when she took Mahlon as her husband, she began serving Naomi. Whenever her husband died, she continued to serve Naomi. When her mother-in-law needed food, she went to the fields to gather grain, serving Naomi. Whenever she came home, Naomi says, "I want to protect you. I want to take care of you. It is amazing you went to Boaz's field. Stay there. I've got a plan." When Ruth comes home, she does not come home empty-handed. Boaz wants her to have 13 bushels of grain. Naomi says, "This is wonderful. Here's the plan. Go do this." The plan works, and lo and behold, Obed is born. The writer then, whoever wrote this down, and we are not really sure who wrote the story, but we do know that this story is written down after David has become king. David. Well, who's David? So they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David, King David. So this story is such an important story of renown that it is being passed down from generation to generation, as a story to teach women how to be women and men how to be men of integrity. The scripture doesn't end there. The writer gives us a little more like genealogy. Now, these are the generations of Perez. Who is Perez? Perez is the son of Judah and Tamar, the son of Jacob. You follow me? To Perez was born Hezron. To Hezron was born Ram. To Ram was born Amminadab. To Amminadab was born Nahshon, and to Nahshon, Salmon, and to Salmon was born Boaz, and to Boaz was born Obed, and to Obed was born Jesse, and to Jesse, David. The author is warning us to know that this is the lineage. He's also told us some very interesting things. In this genealogy, I just took it and made it into a chart. I added Jacob and Judah so that you could see them. Jacob is born in 2033 B.C. Judah is born in 1953 B.C. Perez is going to be born sometime before 1887 B.C. Then Hezron, then Ram, and Abinadab, they're all born while they're in Egypt. And so is Nahshon. Nahshon is also born in Egypt, and he is a leader of the tribe of Judah when they come out of Egypt. You know how we know that? We know that because over in Numbers chapter 7, verses 1 through 89, we find out that Nahshon is the man who is selected from the tribe of Judah to help consecrate the tabernacle when it's built. And Nahshon has a son by the name of Salmon, who he goes off into the promised land. So he was either born in the wilderness or just before they left Egypt, because he's not over 20 years of age. And so he gets to go in the promised land. Salmon is Boaz's dad. Oh my soul. And then Boaz is Obed's dad, and Obed is Jesse's dad, and Jesse is King David's dad, who is born in 1066. Between Nahshon and Jesse, there are only four generations. Do you notice that? We know that Jesse was very, very old when he had David. We know that Boaz is old when he has Obed. There's 321 years here, and the truth of the matter is, Nahshon, Salmon, Boaz, Obed, and Jesse had to be at least 80 years of age when they gave birth to each of their sons. It's the only way it works out. And probably they were a little older than that, because Jesse is very old when he gives birth to King David. And so that is the story of Ruth. A story about being kind and being faithful to your family, about having integrity in your life.
I can tell you that.
Lord Jesus, we thank you that you have given us a time to come and to study your word and learn from it. May we as men be like Boaz, and may our women be as Ruth. What an incredible testimony of the integrity of both of this man and this woman. And they should be people of honor because of how they handled themselves in light of you